This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Right now, we bring to you from Bally Sports, it is Stars expert extraordinaire Brian Ray. I know I gave you a great intro, a lot to live up to. Do you have what it takes?
Oh, with you two guys, is it really that hard? Like, where's the standard at for you fellas?
Low. Well,
that is a good point.
High. Very high.
I know Bassett's out, so maybe it is higher. That, he's not here to defend himself.
That is an excellent point. Now, we have had a lot of debate about this. Do you fear the President's Trophy? Because I do not, but a lot of our fans are like, stay the hell away from getting that thing.
No, I don't. I kind of compare it to, remember when Tiger Woods was like at the all-time height of his dominance, and the question before every tournament was, would you take Tiger or the field? Well, if you're a betting person, you're always going to take the field. Like, the odds favor the field. It's the same thing with the President's Trophy. I mean, with as competitive as the NHL playoffs have always been, the field probably has better odds against the team that finishes first overall. But I think when you're looking from a historical perspective, to go through the 82 games and the 6 months, and you have the right to say you finished first overall after that specific journey, that's pretty special. So I don't think you should fear the President's Trophy. I think you should embrace it. And for Dallas specifically, what happened the last time they won the President's
Trophy? They won the Stanley Cup.
Bang. Bang. So, you know, to play the nostalgia, to play the superstitions, you've got some stuff riding on your side if you're Dallas. So, no, don't fear it. Embrace it.
You and I are on the same page about this, because I have also been shouted down many times over the last couple of weeks.
He's been very bullish about this, for sure. Very bullish about it. It's been nice.
Sports Radio 101, always shout down the other guy. Regardless. Even if you don't believe him, like, just for good conversation, you have to shout down the other guy.
Oh, that sounds terrible, idiot. No, I'm just kidding. I thought that's what we're doing, just that.
I was kind of curious on the Tanev trade. I keep hearing that it's turned out to be exactly what you wanted. Can you kind of explain what he's done for this team, what he's added for this team?
There's a couple of ways to look at it. So, first of all, when you add a defenseman of his caliber, it basically pushes everybody else down one rung in the lineup, unless you're Miro Heiskanen or Thomas Harley with the seasons he's had. Stanley Cup caliber teams are deep. They're deeper than all the other teams out there. So yes, some players may lose minutes. They may lose some ice time. That's the cost of doing business when you're trying to win a Stanley Cup. You know, you want to be as deep as possible. Nobody's ever complained about being too deep in any sport trying to chase a championship. The second thing that he brings is his style of play. And if you want to call it meat and potatoes, if you want to call it snarl, if you want to call it defensive defenseman, but the Dallas Stars have had no problem scoring goals all season long. Their biggest problem with air quotes, I mean, my God, they have a chance to finish first overall.
Yeah.
It was keeping the puck out of the net. So when you add a player like Tanev, whose entire DNA is built around defensive play and keeping the puck out of the net, that really blends nicely with what this team has been and what they've been doing. And then the other way to look at it from a statistical standpoint, we were doing these numbers a couple of shows ago. Since before the All-Star break, when you look at, I believe it was goals against, shots on goal, the differential, and the shot attempts differential for the Dallas Stars, they were middle of the pack or bottom half of the league.
Yep.
Since the All-Star break, and you can tie that in with the Tanev trade, I think they're top 10 in all three categories. So that's a collective mindset. That's not all Chris Tanev, but the bottom line is they defensively have improved and changed their mindset in terms of what they're allowing from the other side ever since the All-Star break, which is a phenomenal trend to see going into playoffs. Chris Tanev is a huge part of that. So there is a couple of different ways to look at the Tanev trade that all sort of feed the same beast.
Now, as long as we're talking playoffs, I know you won't face either one of these teams clearly in the first round, but you would in the second round. What do we make of Winnipeg and Colorado, both as teams and as matchups for the Stars? Because most of the season, it felt like, let's avoid Colorado at all costs. And then you beat them, and you're like, oh, maybe, I don't know. And most of the season, you've had Winnipeg's number. Lose the last one? I don't know. And then Winnipeg has gone from being god-awful for a couple of weeks to now being on fire. So what are we to make of these two other top central teams?
Well, first of all, it's the playoffs. Whoever you get in the first round and the second round, it's an absolute bar fight. Like, it really doesn't matter where you finish. I don't have a one or the other for who I would like to play if Dallas gets to the second round and it's Winnipeg or Colorado. Look, Winnipeg has the goaltender. They have the defensive mindset, and that is that can be very sneaky dangerous to face in a playoff series. Colorado has the pedigree and the firepower. Who knows what their goaltending is going to be given the last couple of games for them. But also we've seen, you know, with Aiden Hill in Vegas, with Darcy Kemper when Colorado won it, you don't necessarily need the Martin Brodeur, Patrick Waugh, number one guy to get you a Stanley Cup. You can get it done if you have the team in front of you. So one team can defend themselves out of their problems. The other team can score their way out of their problems. I don't know if there's one that fits a better matchup mold for the Dallas Stars. Either one is going to be difficult. But also, the way the Stars are built, how can you not look at the Stars and just say, all right, either one, let's put the cards down on the table. It's all in, and we'll see who finds a way to get the better end of it. You know, you have to really like the way the Stars are built to take on either one of those teams in a seven-game series. So we'll see how things shake out.
On the flip side, and I hear what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying, if I rooted for the Kings to lose while the Vegas Golden Knights won and kind of flipped around the wild card a little bit, that'd be okay, right? Like, I hear what you're saying. Bring them on.
I agree with you on that. If you put the gun to my head, I think LA is a better matchup than the Vegas Golden Knights. But the dreamer in me, come on. If Dallas is going to do this, how awesome would it be to slay that dragon in round one?
You're
with
right.
With a healthy Mark Stone. We all know it's coming.
Yeah.
He's back on the ice. We all know it's coming. But to slay that dragon playing their LTIR accounting with air quotes again, that would be an awesome first chapter if the Dallas Stars are going to take this dream run that we all hope they can pull off.
I would have been even more hyped if somehow the New Jersey Devils also made the playoffs in the East, and then I could just view that as like my
just
ultimate.
Start checking the boxes.
Yeah, exactly.
All family business gets settled. Yes.
Exactly.
Brian Ray joining us here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. I've been saying this for the last few weeks now, and just maybe you can make me look really good or not. Jamie Benn he's looked like the last few weeks he's playing at a different level. And it's a traditional Jamie Benn that we're used to seeing. But it just looked like the last few weeks he was like, you know what, guys, watch, we're going to take this on. Are you seeing the same thing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I would 100% agree with you. And you can just look at the point production. I mean, at face value, the point production shows it all off. The thing that I really loved about watching Jamie Benn, it's more that line, right? Clearly, when Logan Stankoven and the kid came up, he re-energized that line a little bit. And there was clearly some instant chemistry with him and Wyatt Johnston. And Johnston has been just awesome to watch this season. Along with that, they have clearly re-energized Jamie Benn. And I think Jamie Benn, not necessarily re-energize them, but those three have put themselves in a place where they are bringing out the best in each other. It's the same thing we saw from the Hintz, Pavelski, Robertson line, you know, the last couple of years. It's what we saw with Duchesne, Marchment, and Sagan this season, especially in the first half, and we're seeing it now with those three. I have just a sports fan theory, if you will. The Stars probably have the most veteran team or one of the most veteran teams in the NHL. And veteran teams know when it's time to put their foot on the gas. And it's not necessarily that veteran players aren't trying or not giving their full or not putting in full effort, you know, at different parts of the season. It's just veteran players know the nuances of a game and the ebbs and flows of a game when things require the RPMs to get redlined and maybe you can, you know, drive the car with the brake instead of the accelerator. And Jamie Benn's a player like that. Pavelski's a player like that. Suter, Marchment, say there's so many veterans in that lineup. And I think we're seeing Jamie right now realize, okay, we don't need to be playing our best hockey in game 81 or 82. We need to start putting the habits in place in March. And I think that's what this team has been doing, which is why they've been on such a hot run. They've been putting the habits in place to be in that mindset that when the playoffs start, game on, here we go. We've got to take our shot.
Yeah, it's so, not, yeah, it's
I
not
would
like
agree
a,
with you.
Yeah, it's not one of those moments where you're unprepared for playoffs. So we've already kind of
exactly.
we've been in this mode for a little bit. I like that.
How does that work in terms of expectations for somebody that you mentioned in Jason Robertson? Last year had one of the greatest individual Stars or North Star seasons we'd ever seen, but he felt disappointing in the playoffs. And that might be too harsh, but I thought he was kind of disappointing in the playoffs. This year, clearly down from a statistical perspective, what are expectations for him in the playoffs?
That's, you know, that's the question. He was coming off that just heater of a season. And so I do think there was some expectations like, oh, well, he's got to shred the playoffs the way he did last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could say he struggled to score at certain times in the playoffs. I think that's a fair criticism. I also think this year he's a much better player mentally, and he's more prepared for how he's going to figure out to score goals or put up points in the playoffs. So I think...
How so? How so on that?
I think it's no secret. The playoffs are a harder game to play in the NHL. It is harder to find time. It is harder to find space. And so I think for him, whether it's an effort thing, whether it's a finding different pockets on the ice to go to, whether it's timing to attack certain parts of the ice, I think he's going to have a much better awareness of when to do those certain things, how to do those certain things. And maybe it becomes an ugly goal scenario for Jason Robertson. We don't see him sniping goals the way we're used to. Maybe it becomes, I have to score the classic greasy goal, right? You know, it could be something like that. I think that remains to be seen a little bit for how does he look come playoff time in terms of producing. But just to backtrack a little bit, I think it's also important to manage some expectations with Jason Robertson. So if you think about it, he scored 109 points last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
He could be 20 points fewer, 10 goals and 10 assists, and he would still be over a point per game this season. Like when you put some context to it,
yeah,
that's the kind, like the season he had last year, that very well could go down and be the greatest season of his career. It just happened to be in his... what, third NHL season?
Yeah, Kevin's definitely one of those guys that if you've done something, now you have to be better and better and better every single time.
Yes. Yeah, he could score 90 points a year for the rest of his career.
Disappointment. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Is he a disappointment? Right. So you do have to sort of put a couple things in context and maybe look at what future context could be. He's still the leading point getter, and he's still a point per game player. And if he gets into this year's playoffs and the Dallas Stars go on a run and he's a point per game player in the playoffs,
I'll take
it. That's no longer expectations. That's consistency.
Yeah.
So, but to get back to your original question, I do think you could argue this is an important playoff for Jason Robertson. And what do we see out of him over the first round and hopefully into the second and the third round, you know, if Dallas can make this happen, it's something to watch with Jason Robertson, but I'm excited and I'm fired up to see what he can do.
Do you take credit for the name of the Phenomenotter, or is that, do you have, is that somebody else?
No,
it's an amazing name.
No, it's a phenomenal name. I have no credit whatsoever. The only thing I will take, if it ever catches on, which I don't think it will, because I'm a Jimmy Buffett fan, I've called the Ben Johnston Stan Colvin line the captain and the kids line, because tomorrow's just a day away.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you're not a parrot head, tough, but I am. So, you know, I'll lean into it. I'll lean into that one hard. I'm dying on that hill.
If you could never, would you never listen to Jimmy Buffett again if it meant the Stars won the Cup this year?
Ooh, man.
Gosh.
We wait until the end for the big questions.
Wow. You know what? Here's I'm trying to justify it in my head right now.
Trying to find loopholes
to say yes to that. Well, yeah, I'm like, is there like a Mac McAnally live album that like Jimmy Buffett appears on? Like, does that like
he can be a feature? Features. You can listen to him as a feature.
Like, if I listen to like Zach Brown tunes, but these feature Jimmy Buffett,
you're okay.
Like, hey, if Vegas can find the LTIR loophole, then I should be able to find the Jimmy Buffett loophole and still get the Stars the Cup.
That's what I'm going to call
it. I'll say yes to the question there.
Hey, that's what I'm going to call this entire playoff run. Seeking the Jimmy
Buff.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you very, very much, good sir. And we hope to talk with you plenty during the playoffs.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. It's good to talk to you and get ready. This should be a fun one.
Let's go.
There you go. Brian Ray right here on 105.3 The Fan. The Stars clinched their first division title since 2015-16, became the first team in the NHL to clinch a division title. So good things happening for the Dallas Stars. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, don't worry about what happened yesterday. What grade would you give the Mavericks for their regular season? 877-881-1053, FrankLaFerm.com. Text line, we'll do it next right here on The Fan.
Shot clock, game clock, nearly identical. Doncic has Adebayo on him. Drives, stops, falling away, puts it up, puts it in. Luka Doncic nails it.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We had to take a clip from Knott this weekend because things did not go as well for the Mavericks. But what I want to know, heading into the playoffs, what grade would you give the Mavericks for their regular season? And also, if you need another football update, because you might. The Arlington Renegades have lost again. They were defeated 29. Wow.
I thought you were going to say something else, so I was getting excited.
They lost to the DC Defenders in a rematch of last year's XFL title game, 29-28 at Choctaw Stadium on Saturday. They are now 0-3 for the season. Now you can clap, Corey.
Oh, and well, I mean, weren't they pretty bad to start last year? And then they turned it on to win the whole damn thing. So best of luck to them.
That is a point.
Kevin, I will give the Mavericks an F- to start this season and an A++ to end the season, which averages out, I'm pretty sure, to a B+.
Is that...
We thought they were going to miss the playoffs again, dude.
No, I'm not arguing with that narrative. I was just curious about the actual mathematical.
I weigh
averaging.
The A more than okay. I do the F.
Or the T.
So the reason that they were going to miss it, dude, like they looked poor. They looked bad. They looked like they were just sleepwalking through another season, and they had no direction. And we were getting to the point where we were like, is it Jason Kidd? And if it is Jason Kidd, we're screwed because the both of our best players love Jason Kidd. The franchise in itself could be falling apart at the seams. It looked like because they didn't look like they knew what they were doing. But then the sale happens, they make the trades, and everything changes. And I don't know if it's because new ownership comes in and gives new life, or if it was just the trades, and once they finally got the horses in the stable, they were like, we can actually do this. I think it's more of that. And look, man, Luka's whole things, he had a baby. Kevin, you've had a baby. You've had multiple babies.
True.
You know how that changes your life. I think it may have changed Luka for the better. You know, he goes on TNT, and he's got all those guys. They're sitting there asking him why he was being so mean and why things haven't turned out better. And he's like, you know what? I do need to grow up. And so he goes out there and grows up a little bit. And I'm not saying that it's perfect right now, but this is the best basketball they've been playing as this group. So I do have to credit what I'm seeing, but I can't say that that bias of the recent moment is not, you're asking a question of the whole season. So I have to put the whole season together. I put them at like a B minus, honestly.
I want to take you to a moment from yesterday's game. If you wondered if you should have watched it or not, I'm just going to run down this like 30-second chunk for you. Brandon Williams entered the game for Jaden Hardy. Then A.J. Lawson missed a three-pointer.
I saw that one, too. That was bad.
Then the Oklahoma City Thunder made a three-pointer to make the score 104-49. What I really respect about this at this moment, or shortly thereafter, the Mavericks called a full timeout. So they're like, look, we got to figure this out. At which point, Dwight Powell entered the game for Alex Fudge.
Okay.
And then after that, Markieff Morris made a couple of free throws. So if you're wondering how the Mavericks lost by 49 points, hopefully that gives you some good insight into who was and who was not playing. One of the
As soon as I saw the lineup, I went, oh, okay. And I immediately knew I did not need to pay that much attention to this game.
That is probably fair. The most usable players for the Mavericks that were in that game were Jaden Hardy and Tim Hardaway. Josh Green and Tim Hardaway. They went a combined 2-for-17. So it makes no difference. I just wanted to throw that out there. And one of the reasons I brought this up, ESPN gave their full regular season grades for each team. And this is what I thought was pretty spot on. At midseason, they gave the Mavericks a B-, but their overall grade for the season now is an A-.
Oh, wow.
And which...
They gave them a B- at that point in the season?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And then they said the trades that they made, the adjustments that Kidd made, raised it a whole grade point. And now they're an A-. And I think I'm there too, because at the end of the regular season, now if they lose to the Clippers, then we'll go back to the drawing board and be like, well, crap. But going into the playoffs, I don't know how much more stoked I could be on this Mavs team. I think they're going to win in the first round. I think they have an excellent shot at winning in the second round, even if it's against OKC. Don't worry about yesterday's game. And that would put you theoretically, potentially up against the defending NBA champs in the conference final. I think this team has done a great job. A- or B+ is where I would be at.
So you know how with the Rangers, we're like, we really need our offense to carry the load for our pitchers.
Yes.
And then we're like, but we're also injured on offense. And so it's going to be kind of a tough run here. We're going to have to scrape by here. That's how it felt with the Mavericks, was we really need the offense to do everything. And that's why we were scoring and letting up 135 points a game, it felt like. Now, Kevin, like, those numbers have changed drastically since the trade. And that's the reason that you feel like this team can actually do something. Anybody right now that's just jumping in on the Mavs season, they're getting ready for playoffs, and they're like, yeah, but they're going to get tossed in the first round. Look, I can see something weird like that happening. But, man, their defense is going to keep them in basketball games.
And that makes you look back, go to the draft, go to the trade deadline, where the Mavericks kind of did something different. They did something different by participating in the draft. And then they did something different at the trade deadline by not going for big games, big names, but good fits,
dude,
on this team.
No, how many of us were like, please go bring me Daniel Gafford?
I'm telling you, I remember that day at the Super Bowl, because so many people were crapping on what Mavericks were doing. Yeah. That probably too. They're like, who the hell are these spares? And you're like, I don't know. I think they'll fit pretty well with this team. And so Gafford in Washington, getting them in deadline deals has been excellent. Kyrie Irving, now part of it was when Powell fell on him, has been very healthy down the stretch. Luka, I probably think he's going to finish second for MVP. And I think Kidd has elevated his game. Somebody texted in, is because they finally gave Kidd a team he believed in. Maybe so.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. That, again, Kevin, we were talking about this the other day with the respect that Luka has for Kyrie. the respect Luka has for Kyrie is, oh, you can play on my level. Like, you are at that level that I can trust you to play with me. And the rest of the team's efforts on defense, Luka knew that he needed to make that extra effort, too, on defense, because he has guys that are willing to play defense with him and for him, too. Look, I know Daniel Gafford can go out there and get me six blocks. If Derek Lively is out there, I feel a lot more confident in what this team's efforts can be, because not that I don't have any faith in Maxey. It's just that changes what you have to do. If you could put Maxey at four instead because you have Lively or Gafford out there, both not fouls, trouble, and healthy, then you're a better team whenever you're going through those spells where you don't have certain guys out on the court. So, no, man, the team completely changed. Whatever they were at the beginning of the season, still trying to be what they were whenever they were going to the Western Conference Finals a couple of years ago. That is, we are a three-point shooting team, and if we don't make our three-pointers, we pretty much have nothing there. They didn't play defense. They were basically being drugged by the team, by Luka, to everything. Anybody that wants to go back and say Luka had a slow start, if you're going to say he didn't play defense early in the season, that's fine.
That I could see.
But he has been doing the same thing numbers-wise that he's been all year long. He's still that same guy. But that's where this team is different, though, is now everybody is committed to the defensive side. That's a difference, man. When you can put the clamps on somebody and say you're not going to get points whenever we need to get buckets back, man, you've changed everything. This is a very different team.
I agree. Health will be of concern over the next week as you take a look with Derek Lively. Obviously, the Clippers are dealing with their own thing there in terms of managing Harden or getting Kawhi back up to speed because he missed a lot to end the regular season. But you don't start the series until Sunday, so you have plenty of time with the play-in tournament playing out. It's pretty cool to see how positive people are from the 903 B+, from the 214 A+, post-trade deadline, from another 214 all around, an A-. And so you do see a lot of positivity going in there. And even Mike, who sometimes can be not the most positive person, he's pretty stoked on the Mavericks going into the playoffs.
I do also like, you know, when I like that you get this opportunity against the Clippers for Luka to go out there and put it on with a team that he has, like real players that can go with him. And it's not just Luka here. You know, this is an opportunity for Luka to put that one away, but put those guys away. And they're a good team. They can be a really, really good team. And you know what? We've seen them do defensively some very good things as well. But, man, this is a matchup that I think is really intriguing because of the star power the Clippers have and Luka's opportunity with Kyrie to go shine.
And we talked about, somebody just texted something in that we're going to talk about more as the week goes along. But we first brought this up like a month ago from the 972, but y'all do know Maxey is going to play the five because the Clippers are going to go small ball. That was one of the concerns that we brought up is, how does
punish them?
How do Lively and Gafford do with five out? If the other team's going small, they've got a whole bunch of 3-point shooters. I think you will definitely see Maxey, but I don't know if it's going to be as stilted as some folks think.
I agree with you on that. I also think then you punish them. You just say, hey, look, y'all can't defend us on this end of the court, and we're going to dunk all over you. We are going to dunk until you guys are done with us dunking, and you go back to that. And then we're going to punish you with 3-pointers. That's going to be the profit there. I did see this video, Kevin. It was Patrick Beverley was talking about Kawhi Leonard and how just matter of fact Kawhi is.
I could see that.
And there was this moment, and I think it was Tyronn Lue was telling, or maybe it was Doc, was telling him, he was like, all right, so when this guy does this, you're going to need to switch. And he goes, why? And he said, because we don't want our guy on that player. And he says, then why is he in the game? And I just do everything he said, man, just was such a funny.
Not everybody's as good as you, Kawhi. Yeah. That would probably be my answer.
Why is he even out there if you don't want him to defend a guy?
Look, I'd be like, I hear what you're saying. And that's a fair ass point. If I get a team full of players that are as good as you, then I will definitely make that happen. And by the way, if you're curious on the ESPN grades, which team did the worst? You could probably guess this. It's the Detroit Pistons.
Why?
They're mid-season.
Did we not lose to the Pistons recently?
We didn't play anybody in that. Don't worry about that. Sure, the Pistons had a record 28-game losing streak. They got an F at the midseason. They finished the season with an F. And I wanted to throw out one more thing for you. It's not happy, but if you were looking to help. A lot of folks have asked how they can help out with Derek Lively and if they want to do gifts in memory of his mom. Surely you heard over the last few days, Kathy Drysdale, she passed away. The Mavericks and Derek Lively are requesting that donations be made to Annie's Place. It's a nonprofit that supports families by providing safe, loving child care so family members can get the medical care they need. AnniesPlaceCares.org. If you want to check that out, instead of sending flowers or anything, if you want to go to that site, AnniesPlaceCares.org to support Derek Lively's mom and what she believed in and Derek Lively himself.
I absolutely support that, man. Absolutely.
Good. Now, are you ready for something you may or may not support?
I always support where this is going.
Okay, it's time for AM on the FM.
What does this button do? Please, please, do not push the button. You have no idea what it...
Now.
Don't you dare touch that dial.
Athletes without aura. That's going to be today's topic here on AM on the FM. 877-881-1053. That is the Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorneys text line to answer today's question of the day. It's actually based off of a comment made by a friend of the show, Maggie Gray. We're going to get to her here in just a moment. But the question of the day is, who is the one athlete that's a total superstar but just doesn't give off those vibes?
Nikola Jokic. Sorry to jump in there. That's the poster child of who I think for this. He's the best player in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch him, whether it's actually when you watch him play, you're like, oh yeah, he's really good. And then all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, he has 12 assists to go along with 28 points. That's the person that I think of.
I want to say Jalen Brunson. Because while Jalen Brunson is this big-time star in New York, and, I mean, everybody's talking about him right now for sure, he still has this persona that just comes off as really low-key, good vibes kind of guy. And every time we talked to him, every time we had him on the show, obviously whenever he was here, he was in Dallas.
Yep.
I don't know if he's changed that much, but even when I see him on Twitter and stuff still interacting with guys, I'm like, that seems like the same dude right there. And stuff I've seen in videos just kind of comes off as still very low-key, laid back. I don't need to expend too much energy because I'm going to have to do it all on the court.
Somebody threw out Scottie Scheffler. It's tough to say, but then
very
again,
low key.
I did predict who was going to win the Masters.
You did. Very low-key, down-to-earth guy. I loved hearing what he had to say about competing, winning, not liking to lose. He's a good one, man. I like that.
Interesting that you read that. We'll go ahead and go to Maggie Gray because she was talking this morning on Maggie and Perloff about Scottie Scheffler and how he just has no aura. And the word that she used, even kind of a little out of date now, but I'll let her take it away.
If he's the face of golf, I don't think this is all that awesome for golf because he's got no riz, as the kids say. He's not a charisma guy. He's not, you know, I'm not saying you have to be big on social media, but he doesn't really seem to be connecting with the public.
Social media?
In this
is
real
golf.
Way. I know, but
you're not even allowed to have phones at the Masters.
I know, I get it. But there are other guys who have been, like Max Homa is a guy who is really kind of interesting and sort of out there with the public, sort of very comfortable in that, and you feel like you get to know him. What do you know about Scottie Scheffler? That he almost had a baby this week? Something that everyone in the world does?
Wow!
By the way, dude, that dude who just won the Masters made it very clear.
He ain't got no riz.
That if he, yeah, we'll get back to that in just a second. That if he didn't, if his wife went into labor, he would say peace out to the Masters. And Kevin, that is wild to me to even think about that. Considering how good he is and how, you know, he's about to win. And he's like, I don't care if it's Sunday and I'm in the middle of it. I'll see you later, Masters.
See,
that's awesome.
That's a proclamation I could have easily made Wednesday afternoon. Saturday evening, especially when I've got the lead. At the turn on Sunday, I'm like, yeah, how far dilated are you? Hold up. Let me think about this just real quick. I don't know, like, good for him. And probably the fact that he'd won the Masters before is helpful.
Yeah.
But just ditching the course halfway because they're like, I got to go. Man, how awesome would that be if you're in second place, you're four shots back, and all of a sudden you're like, boom, leader.
Or your first place. Oh, you're talking about the person in second. Yeah. That would be, I've already taken it. Hold on, does he have to just
I'm assuming
everything
he'll just get DQ'd out for not finishing.
Wow. That would have been wild, but
Riz.
I think she has a good point. It's just Riz was the totally wrong word for this situation.
I'm glad that you brought that up because this weekend, my wife really likes this podcast called The Popcast, and they were talking about slang words, and one of them that came up was yeet. And obviously, that is a big player in wrestling for, I don't know, like a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
But
Lucy says that all yeet. She'll throw things and be like, yeet. And I'm just like, what?
It did make me feel uncomfortable that I was like, that's great that you know what it means. I still don't know if you should be using it. Like, were you ever with somebody, this would have been years ago, and they're like, definitely too old to be saying, oh, that looks on fleek. And you're like, no, I appreciate that you know it. And I appreciate that you use it in the context of that. But you have a mortgage. Like, stop what you're doing. Is that not like there's I appreciate that she knew the word that the kids use.
Look, also, Kevin was not asking me how dilated I was. He was acting as if he was Scottie Scheffler calling his wife from the course.
Yeah.
He wasn't talking to me. Yeah. Were you looking at me when you said that? I wasn't looking
Probably
at you.
Probably just to communicate because you look at people in radio, but I don't know. You make a good point.
I've never been dilated.
Thank you.
That's good. We've seen a lot of votes, and I get this as well, and a lot of this you can see starts to go along with how much do you hear from them in the media or whatever.
Yeah.
Corey Seager is a star, one of the best players in baseball, but you don't necessarily think of him as a, like, outside of here, obviously we do, as a star, just because when he showed that emotion in game one, it was so amazing because you're like, oh, Mr. Roboto never shows emotion like that. Whereas Adolis Garcia, every bit of him has that aura that you're talking about, even though Corey Seager is an objectively better player.
Mm. Yeah, the 6A2 even said every Major League Baseball player not named Adolis Garcia.
I'm sorry. Hold on.
There's a few sprinkled
in there.
Eli De La
Cruz has some shine.
Absolutely.
O'Neal Cruz has some shine to him. I have to say this right. Jazz Chisholm has some star power.
Because if you called
him
Chaz, we would just have to go to dead air.
I would have to restart all
just
that.
Go straight to dead air.
So
my segment would have ended forever.
But there are plenty of players that do. But for the most part, you got a really good point because somebody said Mike Trout 100%. Mike Trout does not give off aura other than he's coming to the plate, be ready. Like, that's his aura, is baseball.
Yeah, and I always say Mike Trout specifically, there's nothing about him physically either, because some of those guys that you name, like Adolis, he's jacked. He's got tattoos. He's got a look that everybody knows. Jazz Chisholm, he's got an appearance that everybody knows. Eli De La Cruz, he has, like, he's a huge human. Mike Trout, you put him in a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, and a baseball cap, stick him in the Parks Mall in Arlington, and maybe two people in the entire 10 hours that it's open will notice him.
Man, I used to think that same thing since we talked about MMA earlier. I kind of want to bring it up for a couple different points here. I used to think that exact same thing about Fedor Emelianenko. He looked like a guy that was your neighbor who works, again, at the mortgage company or whatever. But he was probably, at that time, the most feared fighter on the planet. And then I think about the opposite. I don't know if we want to go this direction at all. The opposite of it, again, in MMA. Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor's coming back. He's going to fight main event against Michael Chandler at UFC 303. He is undoubtedly a star. I don't question that for one second. He is box office.
And he makes sure when he's out in public that you know he has 10 security guards with him.
Sure. Or he just punches you in the face.
Walking in a square with him around there.
But Conor, you think about, like, the level of stardom he has. He hasn't fought in the UFC in 3 years. He hasn't won a fight in 4 years. And in the last 7 years, he's won one fight. Like, that's not necessarily who you would think of as, this is the guy that draws all the money, moves all the needles. And so it was kind of the opposite of that, because he has star power for days. And then you look at what he's done in the sport for a variety of reasons, and you're like, oh, so you just haven't been very good in a while. But he was in Roadhouse, so there's that.
It's interesting because I was thinking about Kyrie because since he's been here, he's just been so, he's understated. He's a very talented player, but he has aura without even really trying, I guess. And that's where I can't say that, because I guess everything, I don't know if it's everything that's followed him from the other teams, or if it's the, you know, playing with LeBron in that championship, hitting that shot. I don't know if what it is, or maybe it is just he is a different character. He's a different dude. And so maybe that's part of that aura that goes along with him. Because, I mean, just when you hear him talk, you're just like, just a really nice quality guy, man.
I don't.
Interesting thoughts, but.
This would be way too much work to put on you. This could maybe, if you ever hear other stuff like this, it feels very much like a Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And like, and now Maggie Gray knows how to use the words that the kids use. I would just love like a super cut of her just using words and phrases exactly like that.
I feel like that would actually be pretty easy, because I see her using that lingo a lot. And it's always amazing to me that people catch on to these things so late, but then I think about how quickly those words fizzle out.
Mm-hmm.
Because Riz was huge for like 2 months. Like, this terminology does not stick around anymore.
I'm too old to have caught the wave of when it actually is hot.
And a lot of people just catch on too late, and it's like, I feel bad, but I don't at the same time. It's like, you should have caught on earlier, but it has such a short lifespan now.
Yeah.
That, because social media is coming up with so many new phrases each and every day, and I don't understand how, but they just catch on and they stick in my verbiage. I don't know how. It just happens.
I thought I was a really cool dad my kid, and I threw Riz out there, and he goes, "You don't even know what that means." And I was like, "It's short for charisma."
Mm.
And he was like, "Oh." And I was like, "Damn."
So he was disappointed that you did know?
He was kind of like, "Oh, okay, whatever."
I'm curious how many people have adopted like these words. The one that I didn't really use, but I heard, because every conversation when my son was in high school was just an unending string of him and his friends using different inflections with the word bet. And I would just be like, "Bro, no, bro, bet. Oh, bet. No, you bet." And that was like, I heard so many conversations that the number of words used was limited, but they said so many things, just the same variation of that exact word.
That's one of the rare exceptions that has stuck around, because that's been around since I was in like middle school. The whole bet thing, that's stuck. I think it's short enough. I think it's concise, and it has, like you said, so many different meanings and so many applications that it's worked. And one thing about the question of the day, I'm noticing that a lot of people's responses are people that are not chronically on social media or in front of cameras, you know, so because you're not seeing any Jason Kelce texts.
Yeah.
Because he plays center. Nobody cares about centers, but Jason Kelce has a podcast. Mm. You know, you start thinking about some of these guys that are really, really popular. They might not even be the best. They might not even be a superstar. Think about guys like Patrick Beverley. I listen to his podcast. I do not care for him as a player, but he is entertaining and he knows the game. So I get insight from him. JJ Redick, he wasn't, you know, some sort of, you know, world beater Hall of Famer, but I still listen to his podcast, you know, and I still think of him as a superstar, at least in the sense of his public perception, just because he is everywhere. He's on your TV. He's on your Twitter feed. He's on your Instagram. He's on your TikTok. He's everywhere. Corey Seager isn't everywhere. Like, you don't see Mike Trout everywhere. True. And I think that's also a shot at Major League Baseball for not doing some of that on their own. But it's a lot of guys that just don't put themselves out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
And I kind of hate it, because I feel like there's some really big names that could be doing more for themselves. Even like Justin Herbert. We talk about him a lot because he's this freak athlete at the quarterback position. He's not on any social media. He doesn't post.
Really?
He doesn't talk. He doesn't really do interviews. He just does his media availability, and that's it.
Soft.
He's a very quiet guy. He won't even get on the team's TikTok page.
Yeah, because he's afraid of pulling up those TikToks and stuff and seeing chatter about him and about how poorly he played.
He's running from the grind. Yeah, that's all he's doing.
He's like, "Man, it's Kellen's fault, not mine."
Yeah, not a true leader. That's AM on the FM.
Joe Burrow, on the other hand, you'd follow that dude. He'll tweet you back, man.
Is it because he said he encourages taunting?
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, "Oh, yeah. Not only do I not want it to be flagged, I want it to be encouraged." Like, you know what? That's close enough. We'll give you the rest of that yard. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's preview the playoffs with NBA champion and our Odyssey NBA insider Danny Green next right here on The Fan.